This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, a new episode. You know, I've been batting around ideas about, hey, we should add another feed. We've got the early week pod with Adam. We've got the Thursday pod with humans. And then on Sunday, Wes Reynolds and I watching NFL games after our four-hour extravaganza on Live Bet Sunday. And I said, Wes, why don't we do a little Wednesdays with Wes here? You and I bet so similarly. We like situational angles. And let's look at some situational spots, some early bets. And let's do it. So we're going to make this brief. We're not going to go too long, 15, 20 minutes each and every week. Wednesdays with Wes. Mr. Reynolds, always appreciated, sir. College game day headed to your alma mater. Are you serious?
Yeah, look, the first official time, because they did come for a Thursday night a couple years ago when Indiana opened with Ohio State. But Ohio State, the Buckeyes, I think were like number two in the country. So that's why they went in ahead and came for that. But yeah, look, it should be a lot of fun with Indiana at 7-0 now getting put in the playoff power rankings by a lot of different pundits and whatnot. And also, I think Coach Corso, probably at 89 years old, not to take a downturn here on this podcast and keep it happy, but this probably his last trip to Bloomington, would think. And there's so many memories there when he was the coach in the 70s. I expected that's going to be emotional. Certainly a guy that does his radio show up in Indianapolis named Pat McAfee probably has a little bit of pull, you know, in getting this go, considering what he is getting paid by the worldwide leader. So should be a lot of fun. You know, I'm very excited and going to be wishing I was in Bloomington come Saturday morning.
The only game that Indiana has not covered this year was their season opening win over the FIU Pit Bulls. They were laying 25 in that one. They won by 24. And Wes, right now, Indiana 6-1 ATS. They have the best cover margin in the country at 16.6 points per game. I was an idiot, and I thought I was getting them at a right spot there with Nebraska plus 7. They won that game by 49. The good thing was I didn't have to watch it after getting obliterated there. But I'm curious your thoughts on this team without Curtis Rourke and how much of adjustment should we have seen in the line? I know it's not apples to apples, but I mentioned this on the Tuesday podcast with Adam Burke, which was the difference between Haynes King at Georgia Tech and their backup based off of the market was about 6-7 points. And it wasn't even enough as Georgia Tech failed to cover against Notre Dame. It looks like the market has adjusted about 3 points here. Is that not enough? I'm curious your thoughts on this game, Washington catching 6.5 at Indiana on Saturday.
Yeah, it actually probably is a fair adjustment, I think, Tim, because Taven, you know, second year now in the program, didn't elect to transfer, initially was at Tennessee and then came to Indiana. Of course, his brother, Trace Jackson Davis, now with the Warriors, was probably one of the best IU basketball players of the last 20 years in that program. So, you know, he's coming home. He's from Greenwood, Indiana, which is just up the road, up 37 from Bloomington. So, you know, stuck it out, could have transferred, but elected to stick it out, knowing that he was going to be the backup, knowing that Curtis Rourke was coming in to be the starter in his last year of eligibility. Rourke, by the way, sounds like he would probably be ready for Michigan State the following week, but they announced it right away. Yeah, they said, okay, yeah, Curtis Rourke's got to have this thumb surgery and that he's going to be out. And at first I thought it was maybe a little rope-a-dope because it's like, okay, they got to prep for Taven Jackson. Well, all they have is like mop-up time and then essentially the second half against Nebraska. So Taven, I think, can make plays in the running game. He hasn't turned the ball over. He managed the offense. And look, I know it was 28-7 at the half, but they were still playing starters, Nebraska, on defense, at least early in the third quarter, and he led them to 28 points, and 28 of the 56 were off turnovers, by the way, on Saturday. So it kind of snowballed on Nebraska, even though it really was a butt kicking. But yeah, look, I think that this is probably a fair adjustment here. It's 6.5. I think if you see some sevens, you will see some takes with Washington, because I think Washington, you know, probably it's going to end up being, of course, we thought Nebraska was going to be a better defense, but I think Washington a little bit better defense. Indiana, though, they believe, And Kurt Cignetti believes, and he's been about business and bringing in all these James Madison transfers who are veteran guys. And look, zero star recruits. I know Matt Leinart pointed that out on the College Football Fox Big Noon Kickoff show. And it doesn't matter when you're older players, when you're used to winning. And that's what they did at James Madison. And they brought in a winning culture to this Indiana program. So from a number standpoint, if this gets a 7, Washington might be worth a look. But I think it's right where it is.
All right. A team that skated by on Friday night. And thankfully, I didn't have money line on Oklahoma State because that was brutal. But BYU, one of those teams where you think back to early on in the year and they go to Dallas as a double-digit dog on a Friday night. They win an ugly game, 18-15. They beat Kansas State as around, I want to say, north of a touchdown dog against Kansas State on a Saturday night. Matt and I both gave that out on the podcast. And now I think it's time to look to fade this BYU team. They're fourth in the country in cover margin at 13.7 points per game. They were 6-0 ATS until the Oklahoma State game where they failed to cover. And we talked about this yesterday with Adam, and I talked about it, hadn't bet it yet because I was hoping maybe we get the 3. And then I had to jump in quick on Wednesday or Tuesday morning because the market started to go nuts. So I was able to get Central Florida at a pick. It's now 1.5, 2. And it's just wild to look at an undefeated team like BYU catching points on the road at a 3-4 football team. But as I say, and I think many of us believe at VSiN, sometimes the line tells you the story. So I'm curious your thoughts on UCF, BYU. By the way, our colleague Stormy Bonatoni on the sidelines for this one. I was undefeated on her games, betting them. I had Kansas State. I had Texas A&M against Missouri. Unfortunately, Louisville didn't get us the cover last week. But I'm going back to the well with the Stormy game, and I'm taking the home favorite now in UCF. What do you see in this one?
Yeah, look, I agree with you, Tim. And, you know, it does remind me of what you were saying about kind of like maybe the odds maker's giving you the winner. It reminds me of my old buddy, the late Dave Koken. Sometimes the odds maker tells you who he or she, in that case, likes. And I think that they like UCF here. And you see, I think, a small money line. I think there's still some minus 115 at BetMGM. It's basically about minus 20, minus 25. I still think it's worth it here. BYU, and I was on Oklahoma State on Friday night. If you look at it, BYU gave up 7.3 yards a carry. They gave up 269 to Oklahoma State. Part of that was the fact that Garrett Wrangell, who's a running quarterback, was in there. He got hurt, by the way.
Yep.
And Alan Bowman had to come back in. Ollie Gordon had probably his best game since the opener, 16 carries for 107, 2 touchdowns. Ollie Gordon also had to leave the game with an injury. So it wasn't, you know, he would have had 150, 160 yards if he was in there the entire game. And I think UCF can do the same thing to this team in terms of on the ground. Ja'Cory Brown, who's now the new starter, the third guy to start for quarterback for UCF. Of course, it was the Arkansas transfer, KJ Jefferson. It's now Ja'Cory Brown's role. He did not throw the ball very well against Iowa State. It was solid against Cincinnati, but it was the running game against Iowa State. UCF ran 39 times for 354 and 4 touchdowns. KJ Harvey, 196. Ja'Cory Brown himself, 13 carries, 154 and 2 touchdowns. So I think BYU is going to struggle against the run here, just like they did against Oklahoma State. UCF, this is kind of a crossroads game in their season right now. 3-4, started off 3-0, kind of quit, in my opinion, against Colorado, and then didn't have much at Florida. Coin flip game of Cincinnati, they could have won. Same thing with Iowa State. So usually I'd be like, okay, this team that has such a disappointing loss, how do they get up off the mat?
Yeah.
I think they do get up off the mat here. This is a game that they really got to have. They got the next two at home. They got BYU and they got Arizona. So this is one you got to have, I think, if you want that bowl eligibility. I like UCF on the money line.
All right, let's go to a rivalry game. Sunflower Showdown, the Little Apple, Kansas State, Kansas, and West Kansas. You know, you look at some of their numbers, boy, it is, it's been a lot of one score losses. You lose to Illinois by a touchdown, UNLV by 3, West Virginia by 4, Arizona State by 4. And then finally they get off the schneid. They get their first Big 12 win a week ago. They beat up a Houston team. They win that game comfortably. And now you do wonder a little bit if you're maybe getting, once again, Kansas in a little bit of a buy low opportunity. So they're catching 10, 10 and a half out there. Market was at 11. I know you gave that out already. So Kansas, Kansas State, is this still a spot to back a dog in Kansas, maybe at a buy low opportunity?
Yeah, and as we record, Tim, there are still plenty of 10s out there. I think even a couple 10 and a halves. So I would grab those. I like KU here. And they've been down, as you could see, losing five in a row after the opener against Lindenwood, then had a bye week, and then, you know, kind of took out their frustrations on Houston. It's not surprising that maybe they necessarily started a little bit slow, considering the fact that Andy Kolonicki, who is their offensive coordinator, is now the offensive coordinator at Penn State. So you have that adjustment with the new coordinator and a new play caller. But KU's been a little snake bit. They had that pick six right before the half against Illinois, where they outgained Illinois, and they're probably the better team. Illinois gets the outright dog win. They lose at home to UNLV, which was another coin flip game. They have that weather delay down in West Virginia. West Virginia scores on the final drive of the game to win by one score. Arizona State wins late by one score in the fourth quarter. So this team has just had rotten luck and you know, maybe ready for at least some better fortune. And then you get Kansas State, who is off two road conference wins. They beat Dion in Colorado on the road by three. They go destroy West Virginia on the road. So now you come home, and then it's like, oh man, this K-State team is pretty damn good, and they are. But I think KU is going to be ready for them. They're going to put everything here. They're 2-5. So you obviously have a sense of urgency to get wins if you want to return to bowl eligibility. And I thought 11 was a bit high here, and anything double digits, anything 10 or more, I still think is a take on the Jayhawks.
All right, let's stay with in-state rivalries, Michigan, Michigan State, Wes. This will be another night game. This will be in Ann Arbor. We've seen a little bit of Michigan State money come into the market. Did not appreciate Michigan State's win over Iowa. Did not help out my win total for Iowa at 7.5. But Jonathan Smith's boys, you know, I'm a big fan of Jonathan Smith. And now Michigan, still a lot of questions about them offensively. Ugly performance there against Illinois. They're laying 4 here against their in-state rival, as Mike Hart once called him, their little brother. So does little bro get the best of big bro in the big house on Saturday night?
Little bro, I've been a little bit down on this season. I thought Michigan State was going to struggle a little bit, and certainly they have. Losing at BC and then blown out by Ohio State, Oregon. You know, they were never really blown out, but they were never really in the game. But they come out off their best win, I think, of the season by far last week, and the best offensive performance too, 468 to 283. You put 468. I know this is not the vintage Phil Parker Iowa defense that's top five in the country, but this is still a pretty darn good defense. And Michigan State went all up and down the field on them, especially Aiden Childs, who's been a little bit erratic, quite frankly, in terms of, you know, throwing interceptions and turning the ball over. I believe he's thrown 9 this year in 7 games. So been a little bit loose with the football. Of course, Childs came with Jonathan Smith, was going to be the Oregon State quarterback this year, but threw for 256 and a touchdown. Also ran for 51 last week. And Michigan State has a little bit of confidence. And you know, I don't know if this is necessarily a buy low favorite spot on the Wolverines, but that offense, Tim, I thought maybe with Jack Tuttle, yeah, who can at least somewhat throw a forward pass, unlike Alex Orji and Davis Warren, you know, is kind of Mr. Checkdown. This offense is still pretty darn anemic, and to only score 7 points. I know they out-yarded Illinois, but couldn't score in the red zone, had 3 turnovers, Tuttle threw a pick, they had a couple fumbles. I wonder about this team. It's not the same in terms of the running attack that Harbaugh and the guys had last year when they had those dueling running backs. One of them still there being Donovan Edwards, and of course Blake Corum now in the NFL. Mullins has kind of been the main guy, but they're just not able to stay out of their own way. They get bad penalties, and when it's a different regime, I know some of the staff has a carryover and stayed over, but Sherrod Moore moving from offensive coordinator to head coach, it's a different deal to get used to that, to get used to new coaches and different assignments. And I think Michigan State is actually pretty much brimming with confidence right now. They got a little money on the opener, still some 4.5 out there. I like Sparty in this spot.
All right, two spots that I wanted to hit real quickly before we get out of here. You were on Maryland last week. I'm still kicking myself for not betting that game. I pointed out the situational spot, stayed off of it, and Mike Loxley's squad comes back, wins the game 29-28. They got to go on the road to Minnesota. Minnesota coming off a bye. PJ Fleck squad came back in their last game. They beat UCLA. Hopefully you got the best of the number if you bet UCLA like I did in that spot. And I'm curious about Maryland here coming off of a win. I know that USC has fallen on hard times, Wes, but to get that type of victory over USC, a big time program, first time I believe they've ever come to your house and you win it. I don't remember if they stormed the field. I think a lot of fans might have left that game early, but what do you make of this one? It's 4. I don't know if you want to play a money line at minus $1.70 at DraftKings, maybe incorporate them in some sort of money line parlay. But I certainly look at the Gophers here in a what seems to be a pretty good spot to go against Maryland.
The spot is good, Tim, but is Minnesota good enough to cover it necessarily? Because I was on the Gophers when they beat USC, and then I was against them with UCLA. UCLA yep. just hung inside Ooh. That number and might have pushed at the end for you. And UCLA was the better team. That's that travel spot that we've been talking about all season with the Big Ten. You know, if you travel more than two time zones, it hasn't worked out well for a lot of these teams. And that, by and large, has continued, even though there's been a little regression from the early lopsided nature of that angle. But Minnesota only had 234 yards on UCLA, and UCLA just turned it over too much. And then we saw UCLA finally get their first Big Ten win at Rutgers last week with Garbers back a little bit more healthy. So I'm not sure what I want to do with this. The spot is telling me Minnesota, but the number is telling me Maryland here. So a total 46. I think you could see an under here. We know what Minnesota wants to do. They want to muck it up a little bit, even though Brosmer's been okay. They really couldn't run the ball against UCLA. I got to think that they're going to have a little bit more success against Maryland doing so, but nothing for me as of now.
All right, last one I wanted to hit on. You know, we're at the point of the year where you're starting to see a couple of teams that just seem a little fugazi. We talked about BYU. I think Duke is certainly a fugazi 6-1. That one on Friday night was pretty painful. If you backed the Florida State Seminoles, Duke +4 in the turnover margin. Pittsburgh 2 weeks ago in a just amazing spot to play Cal, off of the just brutal loss to Miami. They should have lost that game. I mean, Cal misses a field goal late in that one. They win 17-15, get the win, don't get the cover. They've had some miracle comebacks against West Virginia, came back against North Carolina. Here they're laying 6 against Syracuse, a Syracuse team by no stretch of the imagination, West, that is going to be confused with a juggernaut, but you know, we saw him come out to Vegas as a dog on a Friday night, and Kyle McCord slung it around, and they got the win in a pretty nice victory there for the Cuse. Cuse catching 6 here in this spot on Thursday night. Any interest in the dog here?
Small interest, at least. And Fran Brown, look, he lets Kyle McCord throw it around. Looking at McCord's numbers in terms of his passing yards, 354, 381, 339, 385, 355, 346. The lowest pass output he has had this year is 39 against Ohio, where they had mostly a double-digit lead in the second half, so they were running it a little bit more. But this guy's throwing it high 40s, 50, threw it 63 times in the game that you mentioned out in Vegas. So it is always a little bit dangerous a potential backdoor when they let this guy throw the ball like he does all the time. Pittsburgh has been winning a little bit more with offense, I think, than defense, even though the defense pretty much won him the game against Cal. Eli Holstein, the Alabama transfer from out of Louisiana, has been really terrific. Had a shaky game last time out against Cal, but the defense really held him up. I think that this Pitt team is a little bit of a mirage. Now, is this the spot to fade them? I don't know necessarily. Remember, they were down a bunch. They were down close to 20 against Cincinnati in the second week of the season and came back and then won the backyard brawl, having the ball last, and then held on against Cal. So I think that this team is a little bit shaky. I think I want a little bit more, though, of Syracuse.
Yeah, we'll see what that number does on a Thursday night there. Pitt, I wouldn't say it's a look ahead, but they do play SMU next week. So certainly something from a scheduling standpoint to take an eye on. Make sure you check out all of his plays, VSiN.com/picks. He'll write a column as well up on the website, VSiN.com. And you can catch him Saturdays and Sundays on VSiN. Follow him on Twitter at WesReynolds1. It's going to be Wednesdays with Wes, going through some situational angles, some early bets. Wes, always appreciate it, brother.
You bet, pal. Thanks for having me.
There he is. Wes Reynolds, please rate, review, and subscribe. We are back tomorrow with a full breakdown of the Week 9 card. This has been the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.